Coffee Metal Podcast, episode 121.
Greetings and welcome to the Comics Coffee Metal Podcast. I'm your host, Don Cardenas, and today I am joined by two fantastically talented gentlemen who I've been wanting to speak to for quite a while. The men behind the really, really awesome-looking Kickstarter, The Devil Paid Men. Jimmy Kutsai, Eddie Klinker, thank you for coming on the show.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Super excited. Yeah.
I've been wanting to have Jimmy on for a while because we ended up, you know, we've been kind of in each other's Twitter spheres for a bit.
Yeah,
we
had
a chance to chat a bit at C2E2. Get to nerd out about some music stuff. And then obviously, you know, with, you know, The Devil Paid Men, that looks like right up my alley. And
nice.
It looks really, really awesome. And Eddie reached out to come talk on the show. So I'm really excited to talk to you gentlemen about this book. It looks really awesome. But you know how it goes. First and foremost, Comics Coffee Metal, what are you guys digging right now?
Yeah, what am I digging right now? Well, for comics, I'm currently reading V for Vendetta, okay. Which, you know, classic. But I actually discovered that movie when I was younger, before mm-hmm. I got big into comics. I liked the movie. And so I think I got it like a Christmas gift, the collected Frank Miller thing last year. So I'm going through that, which is very interesting. I'll probably watch the movie afterwards since we're coming up to November 5th. You know, you got to watch the movie. Coffee. I had a great coffee today. I had a beautiful coffee from this breakfast place in Chicago called Loaf Lounge, except it was drip coffee. And it was hot for a long time, like really hot. We're like, don't put it to your lips type of hot. So I had to let that cool, but it was delicious. And, unfortunately I'm not a metalhead. I wish I was. But I listened to a great album today, by Jeff Rosenstock. He's kind of like a punk, I would say, a little bit more punk, like rock, punk alternative rock. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Loved it. Had a blast. Great walk. Took a long walk, listened to his album, had a great time. So, yeah, those are things that I'm ingesting right now. It's been great.
I did not realize you're in Chicago. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. Are you in Chicago?
Born and raised in Chicago, but I'm about 40 miles north now. So,
okay. Nice.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm in Chicago, you know, fairly often, and you know, Challengers Comics in Chicago is my shop, you know, is the only shop I ever really want to go to for the rest of my life.
Oh, awesome. I was just there.
Yeah, they're you know, Patrick and Dal are awesome dudes, and you know, it was my when I was working in Chicago before we had kids, you know, that was, I would go every week, get my books.
Yeah,
Challengers was very important to my rediscovering of comics and art and getting
into it
and all that. So
great store. They take care of people that come in there so much. I love going to that store.
Yeah, it's to the point to where it's like I'm happy to just order mail order from them.
Yeah,
if there's anything my kids are in, like my kids were all up in wanting Sonic comics now because they're out there and they're in Sonic mode right now.
Nice.
So I'm like, you know what? I know where to get some. You know.
Yeah, and a local Chicago writer, Mark Bouchard, just wrote Sonic Halloween special.
Yeah, Mark's a bud, and I wanted to go on Sonic Saturday where they had Mark signing and all that.
Yeah,
but that was as I was telling you guys before the show started. Like that was the day the tree fell on my house.
Yeah, which makes sense why you didn't make it then.
I guess I better take care of this situation first, you know. But no, Mark's awesome, and you mentioned you're not really much of a metalhead or whatever, but like, and you know, well, I am, but yeah, I all kinds of music really.
Though. Yeah, same.
Mark's really like kind of like nudging me towards that punkier hardcore stuff, because sometimes give me a suggestion or whatever, hey, I think you like this, and I'm like, all right, sure, maybe, and then I'm like, oh man, I love this.
Well, I just saw I listened to this before I saw Mark also tweeted or made a post about Jeff Rosenstock, who I listened to today. I had discovered, like, I recommend the Worry album, the album called Worry.
Okay,
yeah, I recommend that one.
Okay, yeah, Mark's got really great taste, and they yeah, they're always good for a really good music recommendation, for sure.
Yeah.
How about you, Jimmy? What you been enjoying?
Yeah, no. So as far as music goes, I've really been into binging the song Fantasy by Mariah Carey. Oddly enough, right?
That song is so good.
The Devil Paid Men. Oh, it's the roller coaster for me. That music video is killer. All right,
That song is so good.
With ODB, with, you know, with the verse, you know, and there.
Yeah,
we know.
So that and a lot of No More Tears, oddly enough, by Ozzy, which is an album I haven't been into since I was like 14, learning how to do like pitch harmonics. You know what I mean?
Just
trying to get that squeal that Zach Wilde has.
When you get it just right, it's because it's not just the pinch harmonic squeal. It's also got, he's also adds a little bit of vibrato to it.
Yeah.
And just the right amount of ridiculous gain on your on your amp, because it's more than you think, but less than you would, try.
Yeah, it's almost, in my opinion, more treble heavy, where you really want to crank up the treble, keep the gain at a nice, like, 7 or 8, but you want that treble to be at like an 11. You know what I mean?
The
quote final, right?
Yeah.
But that for sure, those two have been kind of the albums I'm listening to while I'm working on the Double Paid Men for whatever reason, right? As far as coffee goes, I was in Rose City Comic Con a couple weeks ago or a few weeks ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And Portland Coffee Roasters. I was just, that was my frequent stop. I don't know if it's like the best or great or what have you, but I loved it. So I was, that was a frequent stop for me. And then I got to plug our letterer Russ's new book with Transformers. I mean, I've been reading that. Okay. So yeah, I checked that out. And Russ's letters are
awesome. They're so good.
I got to get Russ on the show too, because he's a metal music dude too. So
Russ is a champ. And yeah.
That's awesome.
So those have been the big three, I got to say, as far as the title goes.
Awesome. I'm laughing pretty hard in my head about the No More Tears thing, because I've been listening to the song No More Tears on loop for a long time now. Because back in January, when we did the first EP in the Helsings Kickstarter, I said, if we get funded in 48 hours, I'll learn the solo to No More Tears, dress up like a hair metal dude and record it. And I still plan to do that. I just haven't like I obviously assumed I had more time in my day to learn that solo than not.
Committing to a solo is so it's not how it used to be when we were like 12 and 13, where it's like, I'm just gonna sit here for 9 hours and just listen to the song over and over again and slow it down and speed it up. And
that's the thing. I don't have that. I mean, I didn't have that foundation, because I didn't really start playing guitar until like maybe, 8-9 years ago.
I'm
a bass player. And then I had guitars around to kind of noodle power chords and stuff with. And I didn't really start playing guitar or even trying solos, And And at that point, I was already like, just about to be a dad and all that. So like, you have next to zero time to like sit there and,
I can't
and
even imagine
your scales and your modes. And so, like art, everything with guitar, I'm like, okay, what do I want to do? All right, let me fail spectacularly several times trying to do it.
That's how you get better.
And the thing about that solo though is it's not deceptive hard. It's just like it is so much about like the groove of it.
Mm-hmm.
I've caught there's a
melody to the pentatonic scales that he's kind of thrown.
Yeah, even when you think he's just kind of mashing some some bends and stuff like that, there's a real like, just you have to get it just right or it's not right. And so I'm like, okay, so I have the ridiculous outfit ready to go. I just, I just really have to like buckle down. I have like I pretty much up until the end part's not the difficult part. That sounds like the part that, that's not really the part. Once you get into the emotion of it's easy to go. Because I'm getting really geeky and technical about
this. No, I love listening to two people who love this stuff. Like, that's, I love that.
This is how it was when we first met. We're just sitting over here, but we were across from each other at C2E2, I think, too. Just kind of
shouting
stuff at each other.
I love that.
Yeah.
Two people talking about stuff they're passionate about, I can listen to all day.
Yeah, I tend to do more of a hammer-on pull-off for, that kind of speed, but it's more of an alternate picking thing that he's doing, but you could do kind of do it both ways. So my brain keeps wanting to default to that, and also like just the way he bends is differently than the way I've bended. So it's just like but yeah. So when you said No More Tears, I'm just like slightly traumatized by my decision, though I will do it. My goal is to have it done before we are having to do with the Kickstarter for Eevee. So I have probably another 6 months, maybe a year to actually sit down and do it on top of everything else. But
perfect. Yeah.
Hey there. So before I continue on with the show, I just want to take a minute and talk about Zencastr. When I first started the podcast, it was very difficult to figure out a consistent and easy way to record my guests and have the audio be at a quality I was accepting and happy to have and distribute and put my name on. And on top of that, you know, having a way to distribute the podcast easily to all these multiple platforms like Spotify, Apple Music, Google Play, Amazon. Figuring all that could be an absolute nightmare. And for a while it was. And then Zencastr came along and just made my life so much easier. From having from the source recording of my guests and having them be individual tracks and being able to process those in a way I prefer without having to lose any fidelity, to just having just a very simple one-stop shop for all of this. Zencastr has saved me so much time and effort, and this let me focus on making the best podcast I could possibly make. They have so many tools that I don't even take advantage of just because I'm a little more loosey-goosey with things. But if you are a bit pickier about ums and ahs, they have post-production tools that will find those for you and boom, gone. They have so many cool features that, you know, it's almost too many for one person to take advantage of. It's kind of staggering. But if you're thinking about podcasting, if you are podcasting and you just need a simpler way to record your guests, get stuff done, get it out there, I cannot think of any other place besides Zencastr that will make it this easy for you. So if you are a podcaster, if you're thinking about podcasting and this sounds like something you need to take advantage of, which I don't see why it doesn't, please go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code CCM and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I love listening to podcasts. I love making podcasts, and I want everyone who's doing this to have as an easy time as possible doing this, because when this stuff is easy, the podcasts become more fun. It's just more enjoyable. You're not stressing about how am I going to get this out? How am I going to get this edited? How am I going to do all these things? Zencastr's got you. So check them out. Zencastr.com/pricing. Code CCM. 30% off. First month of a paid plan. Check it out. Thanks.
And you know, so in my brain, I want to segue into asking Jimmy about all his gear. What do you got? What are you playing right now? But I don't want to get too far in the weeds here with that just yet, because I want to talk about The Devil Paid Men. I mean, this book looks awesome. You know, Jimmy, I love your art. You know, it reminds me of just the super hyperkinetic stuff from you know when I was growing up in the 90s. But it's got that, you know, just real dark, gritty, you know, just nastiness. just real nastiness. But you know, you do the thing that really well, where like you have so much ink on these pages, but nothing is lost. Nothing is like cluttered or, you know, confusing or anything like that. It's a lot like Daniel Warren Johnson to me. It's like you get that, you know, you have so much stuff going on, exaggerations of things and stuff like that here, but it all meshes well, so well. And, you know, with this story, it's like, you know, chef's kiss combo. So, you know, Eddie, when you were, did you approach Jimmy with this story, or is it something
I did?
You guys kind of just like, we want to do something together, let's figure it out.
So, yeah, I definitely approached him C2E2 last year, I think it was. Okay. Just kind of talking, not really much about it. And then Jimmy had maybe mentioned that his calendar was opening up, and I was like, what do you think about doing a story? I have this idea about these like nights. With like these big, and originally these were just like knights with all having big swords. This was born from an idea that I found at the Chicago Art Museum. They have an arms and armory exhibit right now. And they had a big sword used by people who were called the Doppelsunders, which means the double paid men. And they were to go into the front lines and take down the frontline defense, and they were paid double for the greater risk. So I went to Jimmy with this idea, and he was like, yeah, that sounds cool. I was like, all right, well, let's chat. You know, it was C2E2, it was wild, it was crazy. And from there, it's blossomed into what it has become. It is so much a collaboration and like a co-creator, because like I said, like it started off with just knights with big swords. And Jimmy has created these characters, has taken these characters to a new height that these were not what I was envisioning in my head when I kind of sent these characters to him, but it's involved, or I mean, it's evolved the story so much, which is really exciting. And yeah, so I approached him as C2E2, and then from there it has been a very much a collaborative creation of these characters in the story.
Nice, nice.
So yeah, like, I mean, the first page I think was originally going to be something like 4 panels. And if you look at that first page, I was like, all right, how are we gonna bring the heat right on page one? Or try to, anyway, you know what I mean? Like, if you can find fire with the first page, then I highlighted it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I was trying to do.
Yeah, it's not to it's not a hard 100% rule all the time, and it's not to disparage writers in any way. But I feel like whenever an artist decides, no, we need to have more panels here, we need to like really break this up, it is always the right idea. It is always the right move, because it's just that first page just it goes real hard, real fast.
Yep,
and you know. And also, I think that has to do a lot with the fact that, like, you as the artist are making that decision, or you know, offering that suggestion, so you are excited about it and you are pumped about it, because, you know, I think that's something that we all kind of know, but it's a bit overlooked, is that being excited about what you're doing translates so much, be it writing, be it art.
Yeah.
You know, if you're excited about what you're drawing, it's going to show up on the page. You know.
Yeah, you can feel the energy. Not saying I've seen people do this or anything else, but there's a sense like when someone's phoning it in, or someone's just doing it for the check, or because of a commitment or what. Like, inherently, I feel like us as human beings, we feel the human desperation in the artwork. Like, I just didn't want to do this. You know what I mean? So I think what we have is super special in the sense that Eddie has written this in such a way that there is a lot of freedom. Where I'm very open, right up. I am a less is more type of artist. I want to just tell me the person walks into the room. You know, like, I need to check it out. So I know the environment, so let me. Mm-hmm. I know that's subjective, because there's a lot of great artists who like a lot of reference and want the camera angles to be in the script and everything else. But Eddie was really, really cool and open to really. It feels like stepping back a little bit and letting me kind of really take the reins on the visual narrative for the story. So that was, it's been beautiful. It's been wonderful.
That was definitely my next question. Like, in terms of like scripting, how do you guys work together? How do you, how do you proceed with like, is it a full script? Is it more of a, you know, the Marvel style thing isn't really applicable to a lot of people anymore, because that can mean so many things.
Right.
Like, is it just kind of like, this happens on this page, here's some dialogue and all that? Or is it just kind of like you kind of hammer it out first and then you kind of write it down and give it?
Yeah, it's definitely hammered out, and it's scripted in a common comic book way. But with, like Jimmy had said, with like less, I would say, direction. Part of the reason I wanted to work with Jimmy is as you mentioned, is like Jimmy's art. And Jimmy's eye for art, and like the way that he puts like angles on certain things. And I'm not an artist. I've seen and viewed a lot of art, but I have not done the practice of making a comic book page come to life. And so for me, it was like, well, I want your art. I'm not going to make you do like the art that I want you to do. Like, I want your art. And so it's been really easy to kind of script this with Jimmy, where it is less or more, and literally pages and panels will just be like, Ludwig walks into the room angry. It's just like, and then that's the stuff that you see on the page, and you're just like, good God, how is this? How does he do it? But yeah, it's scripted very basic, but it isn't that traditional, like, you know, panel count page, panel one looks like this, panel two type of deal. But as Jimmy said, like, page one was four panels, and on there it's like nine or eight. And that's, yeah. And that was something that we wanted to have, or I definitely want to have established of, like, if you read the page and you're like, oh, okay, I get what's happening on this page, and I know a cooler way, or just like a way that feels more like energetic or kind of displays it, like, that's a part of the storytelling too. And that's really where our collaboration has come in, where Jimmy will just like take, like, okay, I get what you're going for, let me do it better.
Awesome. Yeah. And, you know, and just looking at the preview, just looking at the preview you guys provided, like, Eddie, there's, you know, the kind of relationship you have with Jimmy with this and their work is like, there's a lot of maturity on your end with it, because you're trusting the artist and you're trusting your own, you know, ability and your own, you know, talent to do that. And, you know, again, reading the page, like, there's certainly, you know, I certainly know writers who would have gone way too far in either direction with, you know, the scripting of the pages I see. And it definitely strikes the perfect balance of, like, you're getting the stuff across, you're getting the story across, but you're really letting the images do the work.
Yeah.
You know, we're showing, not telling, you know, and sometimes you got to tell, you know, but yeah,
I think
so. I'm glad to hear that it's a very, you know, just a very cohesive format, with you two and your work. So this is the first issue of a proposed 4-issue miniseries, is it?
You know, it keeps going up.
Okay.
the writer in me,
series, my mind just goes to 4
when it comes to miniseries, so. It's definitely, I mean, it definitely is a miniseries. It's not going to be a big long run. I got a lot of the story blocked out and, like, where places I want to take these characters and stuff, but, like, the writer in me says like 8, but the editor in me is like, no, you should try to get that down to 6 type of deal. So, it's been really fun. And I appreciate the words, you know, that you said about finding that balance. And I'm also like, in my writing, a less is more, like, less text on the page is better. I'm not a huge, narration person that I think a lot of comics fall into with having a narration. I think also the story lends itself to having 4 main characters where we progress the story with their interactions and we find out their characters through interactions. So we don't need like the Bruce Wayne, I'm sitting in the rain as it falls on me type of deal.
You know,
like, we don't need that. which has been great. Cause I like to discover characters through interactions that they have with their world. So,
Yeah. There's certainly enough meat on all the characters' bones to where they can just have those conversations that drive the story and keep things going.
Yeah, exactly.
Meat on the bones. Considering how beefy some of these characters are. You know, pun intended.
Yeah.
I really wanted them back. So.
Yeah, they look great. They look so cool.
I see also that you worked with Frankie White as the script editor.
Yeah,
I love Frankie. They're awesome. They are a very talented writer in their own realm. Was there anything that you kind of felt that Frankie was integral in the kind of bringing to the project, or is this, you know, a trusted voice for you?
Yeah, no, they were great. There was so much that they brought to the project that I was very happy. Structurally wise, how this first issue flows, they came in and kind of said, like, what if you move some parts around, which really kind of opened it up a little bit, which was really fun and nice. And, you know, like, once you read the issue, there are some issues, spots where I just move stuff around, which was really cool. And I like the way that it flows. And simple things like that really just kind of can open up a story and how you feel like you're doing as a storyteller. It's almost like someone, you're like trying to like figure out a new skill and you're doing it over and over, and someone just be like, no, just try this. And you're like, oh, I got it now. Like, type of deal, which is really cool. Yeah. I imagine like doing a 6 solo, you know, just like heavy. but they brought that, and then they just have such a great eye for story and for theme. And they really helped me nail down like what I'm trying to say with these characters and what is the theme of this, and to really keep that like top of mind as we kind of go through and discover this world and these crazy characters. Awesome. It was great. Yeah.
And, you know, we've been talking about the book for a minute, but, you know, you mentioned these crazy characters. Well, yeah. Who are the Devil Paid Men? What is this story's thrust? What are we talking about here?
Yes. So the Devil Paid Men is a story about a group of four knights who are a specialized kind of task force in their military. And they were called the Double Paid Men, but due to some circumstances that we go through with them through this story, they encounter a new type of villain that they have to become, I wouldn't say buddies with, but they do have to do some bidding for the devil. And this is a very much a story that kind of delves into overcoming like death and fear of death, deals a lot with redemption, also kind of like recognizing your true self and like what you really want. It's a very personal story, but in the end, the Devil Paid Men are just a group of badass knights. We like to call them like a badass Power Ranger knights. It really feels like a lot of like Power Rangers going into hell. It's a kick-ass story with some pretty crazy stuff that Jimmy has put on page.
I mean, Power Rangers going into hell is a pretty vivid.
Yeah, it really is
for someone to latch onto.
Yeah.
The Kickstarter, when this posts, the Kickstarter will be on its final couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're listening now, just pause, go. There should be a link in the show notes. There's going to be, plenty of links around if you check out the social media of these creators. But go back it immediately. Hopefully by the time this posts, you'll have already hit that funding goal and you'll kind of just be resting easier a little bit.
I'll finally sleep.
Yeah, you know, at least knowing that portion has been achieved.
Yeah.
Are there any tiers with the campaign that you're really excited about people checking out? Aside obviously from the book or anything like that.
Yeah, really excited about probably our most popular tier is our remarked cover from Jimmy. Mm-hmm. So for just like a handful of dollars more, you'll get the 40 plus pages of the physical issue. So this is going to be over 40 pages, and Jimmy will mm-hmm. do like a quick little marker sketch of your character of choosing of the four characters on the cover for you, which is pretty dope. I'm very excited about that one. Oh, sorry, go on, Jim.
Doing some experimental stuff with the remark too. I'm super excited about getting the opportunity to play with the whole idea of doing some more in depth remark. Like get to do at these shows.
Yeah, it's
kind of winging it, you know what I mean? Really, really thinking about.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like the unspoken rule is like if you're at a show, you know, for the most part, there's gonna be some level of just winging it, some level of this like quote finished as, you know, something that would have been done at home. But that's also kind of like the fun part of it too, you know, when you get sketches and stuff like that at shows. You get that kind of just like the energy from what that is and all that. But
I
when we did the past couple Kickstarters, we have the sketch cover. We had a sketch cover tier or portion of one of the tiers, and when it was done, Steve and I were counting it, and we're like, "Man, this is a lot. Like, how are we gonna do all these?" And then thankfully. Because it was supposed to be a combo, like I was gonna pencil, he was gonna ink it, since you know he's a fantastic artist and is all right. But we're like, how are we gonna do all this? But thankfully we were able to like do all that. But then we're like, for the second issue, Steve's like, yeah, I can't. We were gonna have to switch this up. That's too. Steve's definitely one of those people who, you know, sketch or not, he's putting everything he's got into it. You know, so he's. Just drained, you know, and Jimmy and I were having this conversation at C2E2. Jimmy's been really killing it with the commissions and just, you know, pushing the dynamicism of all that. And that's definitely something that, like, as I got to do a couple, it's still the back of my head. Like, I'm like, you know, I gotta push this because, you know, not that it's bad and not that there's not lots of fantastic people still doing stuff like that, but this like the standard cool pose, you know, commission kind of doesn't excite people anymore. You know,
oh.
it, it, you know, some people are really jazzed about it. Sure. You know, there's always, you know, an audience for it, but you know, the stuff you see people really responding to and really just like coming back to and all that is the stuff where you're essentially drawing a page.
Yeah.
You're drawing an action scene on the page or something like that. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it definitely feels like a more interesting thing, you know, and for someone like myself, who I've always been more interested in the storytelling of comics as opposed to the pinup of comics.
Yeah.
I feel like that's probably where I should be pointing my direction, my commission energy direction to, as opposed to like cool pose number 42, you know?
And I mean, I'll be the first one to admit, like, when I'm doing it, I'm pretty selfish. So, like, a lot of times these people are just asking for dark moments. I'm the one who's like, all right, how am I going to make this so that I am, like, yeah, an opportunity to try new things and, like, I don't know, be not so careful. Because I feel like with pages and covers and stuff like that, there's this like standard, right? This question standard that you either meet or you kind of wonder or what have you.
Yeah, yeah.
Where like commissions, I get to go like, I know what the standard is, but like, what if we tried something that like is maybe not the power triangle composition thing everybody knows, but like, what if we developed it a little different, like, spaceship academy? Like, parallel to it, you know?
Like, yeah.
Where I don't always have the same amount of courage. Some of these tracks. I'm super. They've allowed the term and go to do some of.
Yeah, and I highlight the other tier is we still have a handful of Jimmy commissions available that at like a discounted rate from his his show rate, you'll get a 6x9 commission of him and the physical issue. So that's 40 plus pages of a comic plus a Jimmy Kutsai commission, which is just like
I'm looking at that tier right now. That's a killer deal for anyone who likes to collect the original art. Like you're gonna get something absolutely killer on top of an awesome book.
Yeah,
for a ridiculous price.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet
for sure. Jimmy, is there any character that you've been when you get asked to commission them that you kind of have to step back and be like, "Oh man, I like this character too much. I don't want to mess this up," and you kind of get in your own head about it?
Yeah, Speed Racer. I did a 3x5 Speed Racer. And 3x5, it's so tiny, right? Like in comparison to like the 9x12 that I normally do, or even though
you have to do it like that small and have all the other stuff in the back of your head.
Yeah. But that one, that character was the one where, I love Speed Racer so much. Like I really, really do. Like that IP means more to me creatively than a lot of like the stereotypical ones that you hear. You know what I mean? Just because I grew up with that on the TV, you know, nonstop. So that's definitely one that makes me step back. And then I get commissioned to do a lot of Star Wars stuff. That's been kind of the big one for whatever reason. I'm happy about it. But yeah,
I've seen your Star Wars commissions. I see why. You know, someone probably sees you know, one of the wicked Darth Mauls or the wicked Darth Vaders you did, and you're like, I want a piece of that. I need some of that. You know. You know,
yeah, can you make this rated PG IP rated heavy R for me in this 9x12, please?
I think there is no bigger money pot than doing incredibly violent Star Wars or Star Trek or Ninja Turtles commissions.
Turtles commission like that would be fun.
You know,
I'd take that.
Yeah, and you know, I asked the question about the characters because I have a commission request for a Creature from the Black Lagoon, and I absolutely adore that.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore that design. You know, I do kind of prefer the Monster Squad Gilman design. That's kind of more in my heart, but like, And so I'm like, I'm really stuck with it because I keep doing the, the standard like cool looking pose thing or whatever. I'm like, I'm not getting it out there. It's so in my head about this, and it doesn't need to be, but it just is so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
And technically it's for my editor, Chris. And Chris, if you're seeing this, just know I'm really stressing about it, but don't worry.
Give him a break. This is a part of the process. The stress is a part of the process, we promise.
Also, I want to do it extra good for him because he's awesome. But it's just one of those things. So I was just curious, like, is this just my dumb self, or, is it just being a foolish person to begin with?
I find a lot of it, at least for me personally, is just a sprinkle of imposter syndrome every now and then, where you go I'm doing the Creature from the Black Lagoon right now. You know what I mean? Like, so even that is kind of, or like, even with the commission, like, I'm getting paid actual physical dollars to draw Speed Racer right now. How weird is that? You know what I mean? Like, it's so cool. That's so fucking neat. So
it is kind of interesting to kind of take a step back and like, just, I've drawn more comics in the past couple years than I have in the 10 years, prior when I first started drawing again. And it's kind of insane to me kind of look back and to see like how much work I've done. I'm like, oh, it's not all terrible.
Of course not.
Okay. I don't feel bad about this person, giving me money for this now. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
This actually looks like a comic book. Oh, wow. All right. It's a peek into the mind of us neurotic, anxiety filled meatbags who decide.
And I have had the privilege to talk to some pretty bigger names, the mountain of comics, and it's been very comforting to know that it's always there. Like, everybody feels it, no matter if you're working on the next Batman title or if you're working on
an artist, they think they are absolutely trash compared to. Mm-hmm. It's kind of insane.
Yeah, it's a weird vicious cycle that all of us artists kind of feel, but we almost don't talk about unless it's like in these private circles at like con after parties or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then it's that idea of like, you don't want to feel like you're being either falsely humble or modest, but also you don't want to feel like give this air of like, oh, I'm just, not confident, therefore probably not reliable, therefore not like, and it's just it is an incredibly vicious circle. Eddie, are writers like this?
No, oh, yeah.
I say knowing full well.
Ten times worse. Yeah, I mean, I'm always riddled with imposter syndrome. I feel like it's just like a part of me now. It's like like my imposter syndrome has shifted to Stockholm syndrome, where I'm just like. Or like I'm a fan of it now. I think a lot, right? Like it's just a vulnerable state for both writers, artists, to put your work, your words, your art, your values, your morals into these characters, and like I like to write from what I know, and this is very, very much a story of like me and my overcoming of a serious fear of death and stuff like that. So it's very vulnerable. Like, you do worry of like, is this stupid? Like, is nobody getting this? Like, am I terrible? Like, it's just, I mean, especially during the Kickstarter where you go 4 days without a backer, you're like, oh my God, you're just like screaming into a pillow. But, there's just something about it. It just keeps bringing me back. I know it brings us all back. We're just like, we love creating art. We love telling stories, and it's beautiful. And I'm just so grateful to be doing it. Mm-hmm.
Well, that brings to mind the question of when was the first time either one of you, like when you first finished something, or when was the first time you kind of like finished something and someone else's response to it made you feel like, oh, I could do this. This is possible.
Yeah, I think the first time I worked with Krista Herriter, Cabbage Comics, I think, as they're often known. That was the first time I sat down and had an editor look at my stuff. I had done a story before where I didn't bring on an editor because I was just like, I'm not ready. I just got to keep it. I was like, I'm going to bring on an editor. And I was anticipating them to just be like, yeah, you don't got it. but like, in the sense where I felt genuine excitement from them to read my stuff and to talk about my stuff, where I kind of walked away and I was like, oh, like, you know, this was a story born from my idea, but they genuinely enjoyed it. And I'm like, that's cool. That's really cool. And they helped me bring out the things that they saw that I was trying to do. And that was probably the first time I was like, oh, like that was really cool to do.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Having that, just reassurance or that acceptance from someone you respect and you're looking to for guidance and you're like, no, this is good. Like,
yeah,
that's gotta be huge. It's like those little tiny moments that, you know, people don't really think about or talk about too much, you know, but those are the ones we think about a lot.
Yeah. You know? And especially where it's like, it's the peek behind the curtain where they're just looking at the script. Like they haven't even seen the comic or the art. They're like looking at the bare bones of the story that I want to tell and being able to pick up on it and have positive things to say and stuff like that. Yeah. That was really cool.
Yeah. I can't imagine, like, you know, I haven't written a ton of just scripts, only a couple. And, but like just showing those to people, it feels like you're just walking in front of someone, you know, bare naked and you're like, what do you think? Like, and then they're like, not bad. And you're like, oh, okay.
Even when I send my scripts to Jimmy, I'm waiting for an email back like, WTF, dude, what is this?
never.
Which I know Jimmy would never, but no, it is. Yeah. Like you said, you're walking butt naked up into someone or just like being like, what do you, you know, pouring your heart out. Just being like, what do you think? Here's my heart. It's vulnerable, but it's cool. It's also like a rush. Maybe that's what keeps bringing me back to make these stories is getting that rush. But yeah.
Well, for sure. Yeah. How about you, Jimmy? What was the first time you're like, I can do this?
So I have to give credit where credit is due, and my parents have always been very supportive of like my artistic endeavors, whether it be for guitar or drawing or what have you. My parents were really really great at noticing a very young Jimmy's drawing and go like, oh, we can't do this, so let's push this a little bit, right? And then outside of that, I would say school, like elementary school, so probably like, I don't know, maybe first grade or so, when I realized that like a teacher is kind of like, oh, okay, or like, you're the kid that puts noses on their characters before all the other kids, you know what I mean, and stuff like that, like, you start seeing certain things before other kids do. So like that got picked on, not picked on, but picked up pretty early by like teachers and stuff. So I just try to, I'm so thankful for that, because those moments and instances, I think, is really what kind of pushed me to be doing it now and to keep at it and developing and everything. So
Nice.
That's awesome.
I'll date myself. I'm 41. For me in grammar school, it was the arms race. Could draw the most normal looking Ninja Turtle.
Oh, nice. Okay,
that was the arms race, and I was happy to win that in both. Twice. I won it when I actually drew a scene. I remember very vividly. I wish I still had the drawing, but I don't. It was just the backs of the turtles, but the proportions were good. I had all the details in the shells. I had a building they were standing next to in perspective.
There you go. Nice. You knew to throw the perspective in. Hell yeah.
And then like that was, I was king shit for a while with that drawing. Yeah. And then I was the first one to draw the Ninja Turtles in profile.
And it's there you go. Yeah. We got the faces now, right?
Yeah. All those muscles don't look just like bubbles. It looks like an actual arm. Hey, there we go. So I could say probably was the best artist in my grammar school. Then I went to Lane Tech in Chicago.
Okay, hell yeah! Just drove past.
Familiar with Lane Tech?
Yes,
it is a very large school. It's like 4,000 kids.
It's massive.
Yeah, I have no idea what it is. So.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's still like this, but they have like different, like when you enter in the school, it's like different tracks you can take as kind of like your major in. You could do like engineering. You could do art. You can do, I think, math. Or sciences or something like that. And I went the art path or whatever.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're in a room with, you know, 26 other kids who were the best artists in their school. Mm-hmm. And yeah. then right after you is another period with another 26 kids who are the parents in their school. So you just kind of see all these things. And yeah, I fell out of art pretty hard, but also because I fell out of comics pretty hard around that time too. So mm-hmm. like my drive to want to do that, I really fell into photography and all that. But that's about me. But yeah, it's cool to hear that you had that support early on, because I feel like my parents were also supportive. Like mm-hmm. they bought me my first art table. You know,
yeah.
I bought my first bass because I was a good kid. You know, I wasn't like my brothers. So, you know, my brothers were kind of shitty. So, like, I had.
See, I wasn't that great of a kid. Like, I was in trouble. I was doing things. Like, I was the kid that was sneaking out. You know what I mean? I was sneaking behind the parents' back. I didn't deserve the Les Paul that I received.
Always, okay.
You know what I mean? Like, from them, which, again, thank you. You know what I mean? Mom and dad. But, yeah.
I was the good one. So like when I'm like, hey dad, I want to learn how to play bass. Can I get this Squire bass from Guitar Center for no reason whatsoever? But if you want, it could be my birthday present, which won't be for like 8 months.
Yeah.
And Christmas, which won't be for like another 11 months, you know? And he's like, yeah, sure. You know? And then, but that's kind of like where it ended for them though. They're like, okay, we'll get you the thing, but like, we're not going to give you anything like afterwards. And it's kind of weird now, because now they're like, oh, how's this going? How's your work doing? And I'm just like, I feel like so like, you didn't care. When I was younger, like I just don't have the energy. Like, so I'm waiting until I have the collected edition of Evie and the Helsings and the collected edition of the Spend the Night book I do. And I'm just going to like mail them to them. I'm like, here you go.
Nice. Yeah.
That's what, this is what it was for. Yeah.
You wanna know? Here's what I've been doing. Past couple years.
Yep.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
So
really cool.
Mini series is going on. You see it keeps growing, which awesome. You know,
yeah.
It's do you have an end in mind though? Is there like something like you could feel like could be an end to the story, or is it something that's more of a
Something that I like to do when I start writing characters is to flesh out a character by doing just like some exercises with myself. Maybe I'll like write a diary entry as like through this mind of this character, or I'll just write down like what the history is, especially with like a team of four, you know, like what's the history between these two? What's the history between these two? How do they all know each other? And that gives me an idea of like who they are now when we first meet them. And then what's like from almost kind of just like make like a blanket statement of Ludwig is this way now. How does he end up? And then that's kind of how I write and search for how things end for people. And like, you know, what does he say that he wants, but what does he really need, or what is he really going to desire or try to fix or try to accomplish that maybe he doesn't know himself. And that's really kind of where I'm thinking of for a lot of the endings, because I have ideas for really cool set piece endings, or like, you know, these are knights in hell fighting in battles. Like there's some cool things that I want to do, and I have some really fun things that Jimmy and I are cooking up. But for me, it's like we're going to start showing you who these people are and who they are as characters, and so then I want to end with who they become as characters or what they realize through this journey. That's something I'm keeping in mind.
Yeah. And I asked that just because I'm, you know, more so for myself, cause I'm really drawn to, you know, these days, just more stories that I know have some sort of ending in mind at the very least. Not that it has to be like, we're never coming back to these characters ever again, but just that, you know, I've seen enough independent comics. I've seen enough mainstream comics where people are like, yeah, here's our story. We're going. And like, you know, you had like two or three issues, and then the end was coming, and you're like, oh, we just kind of stop.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, all right, it's not very fulfilling, you know?
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's an incredibly high bar, but like, you know, Mike Mignola's Hellboy, universe, granted, tons of amazingly talented people contributed to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, each miniseries felt complete. It felt, you know, at least all the ones I read felt complete. They felt like they had a beginning, middle, and end.
Yep.
And you could continue on or you could not. And if you read the whole thing, you see how all the big picture works together.
Yeah.
And granted, you know, it's rarefied air that he has to be able to kind of like sit back and construct all that. But, you know, I feel like, you know, if you're not going to be shooting for that, like you're selling yourself short a little bit.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I think manga does a really good job of knowing when to end the story. That was like my first introduction. I'm sure a lot of people's introduction to like, oh, there's Goku doesn't just keep going like Spider-Man or Superman or any of like there's a definitive end and we're just not there yet. Like this had already ended years ago in Japan. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, so yeah, no, I think manga was my introduction to like having that closure with a story and a character and actually being able to walk away from it going like, oh, what a like cool sip of water that was. Or what a good gulp or drink or what have you, you know what I mean? So yeah.
Yeah. And you know, we see it in media all the time because how many shows now are getting revived and having revivals and things like that. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, some are more successful or very few are successful, to be honest, but like it's definitely that thing where it's like, you know, we can just be satisfied with the ending we have and just getting accustomed to having like that be something that can happen.
Yeah.
I get it. Spider-Man's never going to end. That's cool. Spider-Man doesn't have to end. He never has to end. But, you know, Goku, let's have him end. Hellboy, let's have it end.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I feel like there's also television. People, it's being seen in like television now where people are excited about a show that says like, hey, here's this cool show. It's going to be 3 seasons long. And you're like, oh, awesome. Like, it's not going to be 19 seasons. Like, I get to go in this thing and feel like it's going to end. Like, that, I love that.
Yeah.
I also really like the Watchmen show. It's just one season. It ends perfectly. You don't want it to continue for a second season after they land an ending like that. You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
You know, I think of like Ted Lasso where, you know, they had their 3 seasons and, you know, now there's a lot of speculation if they're gonna have a spinoff or whatever, but you know, I'm sure who knows what's happening with anything in any show anymore right now with all
the story. Yeah, absolutely, right. Yeah.
So, who knows? And it's just that, like a,
you know, my wife and I love that show. Some people didn't like twisted turns, but we knew what the show was. It was just, you know, a show about whatever it was, you know, but we were happy. Like, okay, we have the ending. It's cool. You know? And then there's people who like want to have Breaking Bad come back. And it's like, that, what are you going to do?
I mean, major spoilers ahead, so you know about Breaking Bad.
El Camino movie they had afterwards, that was good, that was fine. You know, you're telling a story. Better Call Saul, I think I like that more than Breaking Bad, to be honest. But again, that wasn't so much a revival as just like
a continuation of a story or a different plot from that story.
You know, but like there's like that whole like that Frasier is being revived or whatever. And I just have zero interest in that. Like,
I didn't enjoy it back then. No offense to Frasier fans. I know it's a thing, just like all that comes from the 90s. There's a fan base, and I'm so sorry. But yeah, Frasier was not me.
Well, you know, when it was coming out, you know, because you know, my wife and I have been together since, you know, 99. So, like, you know, I think it was still on when we were together, dating at the very least. And it was never a show we watched or whatever, but like we caught it like in reruns and stuff like that. And then when my son was born a few years ago, you know, we just started restarting it from zero and watching it. And it was one of those things where we're like, oh, wow, so much stuff happens so much faster than you remember in a show and like, and all that. And then there's like so many episodes where you're like, oh, man, that wasn't a good one. But, you know, then you think about it, you're like, well, these shows weren't, you know, when they had those 26 episode seasons, they weren't supposed to be. No one really thought people would be going back and rewatching them obsessively and things like that.
Right? Absolutely not. Unless people were like obsessively like VHS taping it as it was going. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because that was the technology back then. Like that was it.
So. Yeah, exactly. But you know, to bring it to wrangle the conversation back to comic.
Yeah, there we go.
So I always ask this of everybody who's doing a Kickstarter, and it's a bit mean for me to ask this now, but I know how everybody's mind works and I know this stuff. What else are you guys working on? What's cooking? What are you excited to do next? Obviously the next issue or that, but are there any other things that are kind of like boiling? 'Cause we all have our stove full of pots that are going. So is there anything else that you two have that you're excited to talk about once the dust kind of settles from this Kickstarter?
I mean, for me, I'm still in this world. I'm still writing the next issues and blocking that stuff out, and I'm still having a blast. There's still so many ideas that I'm trying to get to, and the goal is to just keep Jimmy along as much as I can until he either gets sick of me or I can't keep up with him anymore. But for me, yeah, I'm still living in this world of the Devil Paid Men. I got about like 3 issues probably written. Just going to keep going just because I can't stop thinking about it. I have so many notes in my phone where I'll think about another like thing about Niles, or I'll think about like, oh, what if he would do this? And I'll write in my phone. So it's like, I'm still living in it. I don't know if I could dedicate much effort or energy into another project right now, as I'm just so engrossed in the Devil Paid Men's environment right now.
Okay. And Jimmy, I know you've been incredibly busy the past lifetime, so is there more on other projects you've been working on the horizon, or just
I'm gonna be, it hasn't been announced yet, but I will be working on a 16-page short for an anthology with Justin Richards. So I'll be teaming up with Justin again. They're fantastic, and I've worked with them multiple times.
Justin's awesome.
So I'm looking forward to that, and I've already been doing the planning stages of everything, and I have the script in my hand, and everything's looking good, you know what I mean? So that's dope. I have some stuff that I just can't talk about, sadly, but it's all good news. So that's cool. So keep an eye out for some announcements probably for the next year or so. And then, I'm working on a little fan comic to give out at Comic Cons and stuff like that. That's just for fun. Flexing a new muscle and learning how to use it, because I think I want to dabble with writing and drawing my own stuff here in the future and stuff too.
There's something I've been slowly working on myself. One of those, I got to blame Daniel Warren Johnson for starting.
100%. I mean, he's the standard of it.
Yeah, in my head, like just having that fun fan comic to have for people at shows. So hopefully, I'd love to see whatever it is you'll be fanning up on.
It should be ready by Emerald City next year. So a nice little 12-page mini comic that won't be for sale at my table, right? It'll just be there, but you can pick it up and
drop a tip.
Check it out, and if you want to drop a tip, that's fine. But nothing's for sale on that front, you know. But it's been fun. It's already written and scripted and laid out, so it's really just me penciling and inking the pages, and I've been incrementally doing them here and there on top of all the other fun and cool stuff that I get to say I'm a part of right now.
Busy. I love it.
Well, I didn't want to keep you gentlemen for too long. You're obviously very busy. You're just doing all the work with the Kickstarter, and Jimmy, you need some rest for sure. I do have one last question for Jimmy. It's because guitar nerd stuff. I got to ask, what is the Jimmy signature model guitar? What is
it? It's a Les Paul. It's a Les Paul Sunburst 1968. It's a 1968 Sunburst Les Paul with like a 75 humbucker in the bridge and a 68 Classic in the neck is what I think. Yeah. With already with the lock straps, because I can't be messing around with anything. I want it already there on the guitar. Yeah. And I want the neck shaved down to a 58. That's what I want.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't know anything you just said, but it sounds so
rock
cool.
Beast right there. Like you can't. I
want it to feel and sound like 1973. You know what I mean? Like it's just, or 75, I guess, with the humbucker I want. So.
Nice. Jimmy, Eddie, it's been an absolute blast having you both on. You're more than welcome to come back at any time, talk about anything else.
Thank you. Hopefully,
The Devil Paid Men 2.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Now is the time to let everybody know where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, I am on the Twitter or whatever that we call it now at Eddie Klink, Eddie EddieKlink, or you can find me on Instagram with Klinkza, KlinkZa. I don't know where I got that name from. I grew up a soccer player, so maybe there was like some Brazilian soccer player that had like a cool last name or something. But yeah, maybe, yeah, you can find me there. Yeah.
Yeah, and then, I mean, my last name is crazy. So if you type that into Google, Jimmy Kucaj, KUCAJ, you're bound to find me. But I am on the app formerly known as Twitter, at Jimmy Kucaj Art. And then on Instagram, I'm just at Jimmy Kucaj. And I'm usually playing around on Instagram. I'm not.
Yeah.
I wasn't a big Twitter head before What's-His-Face bought it, but.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's abysmal now.
Now it's not even worth. That's not fair to say. It feels like it's not worth my time, to be completely honest, just because of the way the algorithm has so noticeably shifted.
Yeah.
Once ownership shifted, I don't know. I'm not trying to get into anything but it's a fun thing to notice.
Yeah. what is Jimmy? I want to ask what nationality is Kucaj?
Oh, it's Polish. Yeah.
Okay.
It used to be KUCZAJ. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's and cool. Then my great grandfather was like, "They'll never guess if we just drop the Z, because this this last name is so common." You know.
Can we do that? Can you be the great father in your history and be like, "I'm going to bring the Z back"?
I thought about it. I don't know how that works for like genealogy. Yeah. Like cousins 100 years from now are like, "Oh, and then this Jimmy artist dude fucking brought it back for some reason. That's weird." Yeah.
If someone can just get rid of it.
Wanted their name to be even harder to manage, you know.
Well, the funny thing is, Eddie. You know, Eddie and I, we're from Chicago. So if you had the Z in there, we would have figured it out instantly. Then,
right? Or if there was like my dad. I don't know where he heard it. I'm sure it was just passed on from family to family until like you could go on that website and actually like physically look it up. What's it called? I
can't. 23andMe.
Ancestry.
Yeah.
Before that, and everybody thought it was Kusowski at first, which is a very, I mean, it sounds correct, I guess, you know what I mean? But then, like, yeah, no, you find old boat records, and it's like, oh, John Kucaj with a Z, huh? Yeah.
Got a little spice on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Right? But yeah,
Somebody can make that decision. Why can't we make the decision? Why can't I just change my life?
I mean, hey, you can. You can change it to Klinkza if you want.
There we go. Just like my Instagram handle.
I'm just going to add some like Enyes and stuff to my name. Just, you know, just in random places, maybe even umlaut, just to throw some spice.
Put them on every N in your name. Put an Enye on every N and E in your name.
Yeah. 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 I never fault anyone for like not getting my last name pronunciation correctly, because my own mom doesn't do it right. So.
I'm right there with you. My thing is, I'm in my job is publication, right? So like, just spell it right. That's all I care about.
That's all. Yeah.
Yeah. Nope. As long as the last name is spelled right, I know it's going to be butchered, and that is fine. It's been a few years now, and I'm used to it. Yeah.
It's just get the spelling right. That's the right head to have about it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you,
John. Nice having you on. Everyone, go check out The Devil Paid Men. There'll be a link in the show notes below.
And real quick, just a huge shout out to Linda Scott Campbell. She's coloring the book. She is making it possible for me to even draw this wild shit. And then Russ Wooten is killing it on letters and really making this comic feel like a comic book. So I just want to do a shout out to them and tell them how much I appreciate it.
Russ is a legend, and... His work is just impeccable. And
Linda's colors are it feels like a light is just being shined on Jimmy's work, and it just makes everything pop. It's truly incredible. Shout out to both Linda and Russ.
Not to interrupt, but just wanted to throw that out there.
No, thanks for bringing it up, because I want to make sure everyone gets a chance to be a notice for the work we're doing, because the colors do look amazing. So thank you for bringing that up. And bringing up Linda's work on there. It's the whole book looks amazing. I can't wait to read it. And I can't wait to, you know, read the rest of the story and see where it goes from here. So
awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.